It's 7:43 in this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Today we'll hear about a 70-year-old music festival serving a different kind of Christian music.
Most of the Christian music you hear on the radio is known in the music industry as contemporary Christian music. This style has been around since the 1960s when artists started mixing the sounds of pop and rock music with religious lyrics. But the West Virginia Mountain State Southern Gospel Convention was built on a completely different and older genre of sacred music known as Southern Gospel.
We'll hear more about that story on this West Virginia morning. A new study finds that underground coal miners aren't the only ones at risk of lung disease. Workers at surface mines are also vulnerable. That's according to new research from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. As Sydney Bowles reports, the findings show that current protections for surface miners are not sufficient to prevent disease.
Researchers analyzed data from 1982 to 2017 and found that even though surface coal miners are exposed to less overall mine dust than they were in the 80s, the share of highly toxic silica dust in that mine dust has not significantly decreased. That means surface coal miners remain at risk of getting sick. Scott Laney is an epidemiologist at NIOSH who worked on the study.
We know that silica and mine dust are toxic, and we have the technology to suppress it, and yet coal miners are still being exposed to way too much of it.
Researchers looked at surface mines specifically because those mines employ about twice as many coal miners as underground mines, and yet less was known about surface workers' exposure to the deadly dust. The report found that miners in central Appalachia have a higher risk of overexposure, and people working in drilling occupations are also exposed to the most dust.
From a public health perspective, there's ample evidence to support that further safeguards are needed, and I think that the time for action on it is now.
Regulators at the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration are considering potential changes to existing safety standards. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Sydney Bowles.
A group of 18 states, led by West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrisey, is urging the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn a lower court ruling that blocked construction of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline under the Appalachian Trail. Brittany Patterson reports.
Last December, the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled the U.S. Forest Service should not have granted the 600-mile natural gas pipeline a permit to cross under national forest lands, including the Appalachian Trail. Judge Stephanie Thacker said the agency failed to examine environmental impacts of the project when it issued the approval. The court threw out the pipeline's right-of-way for the Appalachian Trail. The ruling could have big impacts for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline's route. Pipeline developer Dominion Energy appealed the ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court. In an amicus brief filed Monday, Morrisey argues if the lower court's decision is upheld, the 1,000 miles of federal land along the Appalachian Trail would become off limits to this and other natural gas pipelines. Morrisey and 17 other state attorneys general say the ruling could turn all federal trails into barriers to energy development. Oral arguments in the case are set for February 24th. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brittany Patterson.
There's a place in southern West Virginia that many consider holy ground. For nearly 70 years, gospel music fans have gathered on a mountaintop just south of Summersville Lake for weekend concerts featuring singers from all over West Virginia and its surrounding states. This is the annual West Virginia Mountain State Southern Gospel Convention. Inside Appalachia Folkways reporter Zach Harold has been going to the event since he was a kid. He produced a story about the event that was recently featured on an episode of Inside Appalachia. Here's an excerpt.
This is God's. This is not ours. We're just workers for Him. This belongs to Him, and we're here to spread His word through gospel music.
Notice what she said there? Not Christian music. Gospel music. There is a difference.
I keep fighting voices in my mind that say I'm not enough.
Most of the Christian music you hear on the radio is known in the music industry as contemporary Christian music. This style has been around since the 1960s when artists started mixing the sounds of pop and rock music with religious lyrics. But the West Virginia Mountain State Southern Gospel Convention was built on a completely different and older genre of sacred music known as Southern Gospel.
I remember the time.
You can trace the roots of the style to one songbook published in the year 1900 in the tiny town of Lawrenceburg, Tennessee. It was called Gospel Chimes, and it was the creation of singing instructor James D. Vaughn. The book contains songs by Vaughn and other Christian songwriters of the day, arranged in four-part harmony. After it was published, Vaughn sent out quartets to perform concerts featuring the bouncy tunes from the songbook.
Everybody will be happy over there. Everybody will be happy over there, over there. We'll be happy over there.
As his company grew, Vaughn published additional songbooks and started additional quartets. It wasn't long before other publishers got in on the act, which inspired other quartets to head out on the road and churches to organize singing conventions where different congregations would come together and sing their favorite songs. That's how the West Virginia Mountain State Southern Gospel Convention got its start in 1949. Held at the Nazarene Church Camp just outside Summersville, it was supposed to be a one-off thing, but the sing was such a success that organizers decided, right there by the camp's split rail fence, to make the convention an annual occurrence. It eventually outgrew the Nazarene Church Camp and bounced between a few locations before the convention purchased 48 acres of land in Mount Nebo. Over the years, the event shifted away from congregational singing to focus more on performances by Southern Gospel quartets. And that's when the crowds really started flocking to the tabernacle. Back at the sing, Linda Fitzwater, now 77, says she started coming to Mount Nebo when she was just about 16 years old.
I can remember when I was a teenager that these fields up here where they park the cars would be full. When we had rains like we've had today, the farmers would bring their tractors out and pull the cars out. They would be thousands, not hundreds, thousands of people here.
The 1970s is when the convention really seemed to hit its stride. Singer Eddie Withrow remembers one night when prominent Southern Gospel songwriter Conrad Cook wasn't quite finished when the convention was over.
It was about 2:30 in the morning, and the singing had just stopped here in the tabernacle. And he said, if I had a piano, I said, baby, we'd sing. We pulled the piano off our bus and set up the little sound system. We got right out there, and there must have been probably 150, 200 people out there round in a circle in their lawn chairs.
Attendance at the convention remained strong throughout the 80s and 90s. That's when I first started going.
I'm going home on the morning train. I'm going home on the morning train. Evening train may be too late. I'm going home on the morning train.
Yep, that's me, singing off key and thrashing on a mandolin that was just a little bit too big for my 5-year-old frame. I remember stepping on stage with my family's Southern Gospel group, the Bobby Adkins family, and looking out over what seemed like an endless sea of people. But things started to change. Radio shifted away from Southern Gospel music, as did some churches. Older fans started dying off. In the 1990s, average attendance was around 15,000 people between all three sings. By the year 2000, that figure had dropped to about 10,000 people, and it's continued to decline. Each sing now draws just a few hundred people. I hadn't been to Mount Nebo in years, but on the night I was there, there were almost as many singers waiting in the back as there were audience members to hear them. But the people running the convention aren't content to let their tradition die on the vine. Larry Neff was elected convention president last year. He has some ideas about how to get Mount Nebo thriving again. The organization held its first ever bluegrass gospel sing in May 2019, which attracted a modest but promising turnout. They're also upgrading the campgrounds in hopes of attracting more campers. These steps appear to be working. Neff says he noticed a slight increase in attendance in 2019. But he knows that the long-term future of the convention is up to young people.
If you don't have young people to come up and carry it on, like now the most of us are over 50. You've got to get young people interested in something if you want to see it grow and keep on growing.
Neff acknowledges that getting young people involved will probably require incorporating more of the modern Christian music that they enjoy. But he hopes to find a way to do that while staying true to the convention's roots.
I believe we're going to have to get contemporary music in here, bluegrass gospel, and still keep it the old-fashioned way. You know, somehow we're going to have to mix those three together.
In the meantime, the folks on Mount Nebo are doing their best to make it through. On the night I was there, Nelson took the stage to explain some recent bad news the board received.
We found out that our insurance that we have been carrying has been very lacking in the amount of coverage we need to have. So to bring our insurance up to date, an increase of about $3,000. So we've got to cough up some money.
So what did the organizers do? What they've always done. Nelson asked Withrow to say an offertory prayer. Then, as the offering plates are making their rounds, the crowd joins together in an old familiar song.
When we've been there 10,000 years, than when we first begun. And all of God's people said, amen.
For Inside Appalachia, I'm Zach Harold in Mount Nebo, West Virginia.
That story was part of the Inside Appalachia Folkways Reporting Project that was on a recent episode. To hear this story and more stories of folk life, arts, and Appalachian culture, subscribe to the podcast. Visit us at wvpublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. I'm Teresa Wills.